Very good. So for this evening's talk on something to do with Buddhism, life, spirituality, another talk on how to be a happier human being, tonight's talk will be on... I like to make things exciting in these Dhamma talks. So wait for it. On patience. Because sometimes people, they just want to find out, they want to know, they want to get somewhere. And patience is one of those qualities for those of you who are traditional Buddhists. You know, the Buddha actually said, Kanti paramang tapo titika, that patience is the highest of all the spiritual qualities. So what does it mean by being patient? You can just see just how many people are rushing around this world trying to get somewhere. And often think, where are you trying to get? Sometimes, you know, you fly off to Thailand and you fly back again. Sometimes you go home and you come back here, you come back here, you go home again. You ever notice you always finish off where you started? That's why sometimes I see these poor horses on this horse racing. They go round and round and round, they never get anywhere. Or Olympic Games, the same thing. If you go on a sprint, they go round and come back again. High jump, you go up, you go down. That's just a life. You never really get anywhere, do you? That's why that sometimes we have like a phrase in English, and it's ask how you're going, you're getting there. Where are you getting? I'll tell you where you're going. Karakata, Pinaroo, or Fremantle. That's where you'll end up. So when you say, I'm getting there, that's where you're going. So is that really where you want to hurry to end up there? So instead of doing that, instead of trying to get somewhere, instead of trying to sort of go somewhere, what patience means is being here. Being with what you have. Now that's sometimes very difficult, because what you have is sometimes really unpleasant, really nasty, really difficult to bear. They're like mother-in-law, husband, wife, kids. Sometimes these people can drive you crazy. But if we don't have that patience, then we miss so much of life. In fact, sometimes you ask a person, how old are you now? And where's all those years gone? How many years have passed by? Why? Where? Have you really been there while life was happening? Because otherwise people, they just rush ahead of themselves so fast that that's why life goes by and we wake up one morning, we're 40, we're 50, we're 60, we're 70. And where has all that time gone? It's all gone because we weren't here. So being patient is learning how to be here. And learning how to be here is not an easy thing to do. Number one, our life keeps on telling us to plan for the future. And well, what are you going to do this weekend? Anyone know what they're going to do this weekend? Absolutely uncertain. You don't know what's going to happen this weekend. So you may have sort of plans, but tentative plans. So keep it just not set in concrete, because when you have future plans, you spend too much time there in the future. And a lot of times it's trying to get this out of the way so you can go and do something else. And you find that what you're really getting out of the way is your life. So being patient is learning how to be here, being with things, rather than trying to get rid of things. Isn't it wonderful just being here and not a Mara Center, just on a Friday evening with nothing to do, with your friends, listen to a Dharma talk. You're not going to be given an exam after this Dharma talk to see how much you remembered. It's not school or university. You're not going to have to do anything or to compete anything. The only thing you have to do, the only requirement of you is to sit still and shut up. Surely that must be an easy thing to do. So many things in life are very stressful, but to sit still and shut up, that can't be any stress. So you're just relaxing here while I entertain you. So by doing such a thing, surely it should be easy to be here. Now that's what we call patience. just being here with what's happening. In a place like this, it should be easy to be here. But however, in many other parts of your life, because life is sometimes unpleasant, you're sick, or it's hot, or it's cold. You all know, were you very cold this week? Well, I just came back from Thailand on Tuesday afternoon. As soon as I came out from this warm country, you got hit by this cold, icy wind. But, you know what happens when that happens to you, when you feel really cold? When you're cold outside, you should make an even warmer heart. And when you have too much heat, what should you do? Keep a cool head. That's called Buddhist air con. It doesn't cost anything. It's environmentally friendly. So remember, when it's warm, keep a cool head. When it's cold, keep a warm heart. And what do we mean by a warm heart? A warm heart means you have love, you embrace these things. And we can embrace almost anything. You can love anything. I don't know if I mentioned that story last couple of weeks ago. That story of that woman who always kept a photograph of her husband in her purse, you know, in her sort of handbag. And they had been married for about 30, 40 years. And she always carried a photograph of her husband around with her to use in times of difficulty and trouble. Because whenever life was a real problem, whenever it was just so difficult, she would open up her handbag and take out the picture of the man she'd been married to for 30 years. And she looked at him and said, "If I can endure that, I can endure anything." So that put all the problems in perspective. This is learning about being patient with things. And life is like this. We have to learn how to put up with things. But to learn how to be patient, to learn how to be with things, is actually to have that warm heart towards things. Or when life gets difficult, have a bit of a cool head, so you don't get too upset. And that's actually learning patience, a cool head and a warm heart. Because life is not always easy. We always have to do things and worry about things. We always have to do things, but it's when we worry about the things that causes the impatience. And you ever notice that patience means being with what's happening? If it's unpleasant, we can learn from it. We can always do something with something. But impatience is when we want to get rid of things to try and be somewhere else. So I call patience waiting in the moment. And impatience is waiting in the future. Waiting for something to happen. Waiting for some place where you don't have to have this problem, this anxiety, this trouble, these people who cause you all sorts of problems. Waiting in the future for something to happen. Rather than waiting in this moment. The idea of waiting is a very beautiful word. Because it doesn't just mean being patient. It means like a waiter in a restaurant. You're actually serving this moment rather than fighting it. And if any of you have ever been waiters in restaurants or in cafes, and you spent your time or some time earning a little bit of extra money by serving on tables or serving in a sort of a shop, some of the customers are just so demanding. Some of them are so nasty. I don't know what it's like in the library shop here, but sometimes some of the librarians sort of say, they want their book now, they want a sort of receipt right now, they want to book up for a retreat, they want a prior enlightenment. Are you selling enlightenment in the shop right now? Whatever it is, they're asking so much, and it can be very demanding. So what do you do when you're in that sort of position, you're serving someone? You're waiting on them, you're serving them. And when you wait on somebody, you're actually in this beautiful sense of giving, not wanting anything back in return. And this is like waiting, serving, it's being with that person. And learning how to be with things is learning how to be patient. serving the moment, serving the sickness, serving the difficulty which you're experiencing right now, serving it rather than trying to get something back. So when one learns how to wait in the moment, to serve in this moment, you know, we learn about what patience truly is. And you find that it becomes an easier thing to do. We don't always rushing off into the future. We're not always making things happen, having to have things happen. We learn important factors of this spiritual path. It does take time to grow in peace, in kindness, in wisdom, in compassion. It takes time, but it goes much faster the slower you go. In other words, the more you're in the moment, the quicker you learn. The more you run ahead, the slower you go. In other words, the more time it takes. There's a story of one of my first meditation teachers in Thailand. He told me, I usually tell this on the meditation retreats, not usually on a Friday night. He told me when I was starting out my meditation career, that when he was a young boy in Thailand, that his father gave him some seeds to grow in the garden. He was only about 5-6 years of age, and it was the first time he grew anything. So this little 5 or 6 put these little seeds with the help of his father underneath the ground, underneath the soil, and he would water them every day. After 3 or 4 days, he saw no result. He said, "Where are my plants? Where are my flowers? It's 3 days now, I can't see anything." His father had to tell him that when you have seeds, when the water gets to them, they germinate, they split the seed, and a little green shoot comes out. It's probably under the ground right now, pushing its way to the surface. Just wait for a little while, and you'll see a shoot. Be patient. And he took his father's advice, and fortunately, at the end of 2 days, a tiny green shoot was appearing above the earth. So he decided to water those flowers 2 times a day. He was getting excited. And those flowers grew until about 2 inches high. And that's when he lost his patience. He decided to stretch them to make them grow faster. And he killed every one of them. But he learned a wonderful lesson. You can't stretch nature. Nature takes its time to grow. So this is many things I see in life. You can't stretch nature. You can't make it grow faster. For those of you who want the receipts for your donations for the end of the tax return, don't stretch nature. It just takes time. Be patient. It will come. Instead of demanding, "I want it now. I need it now." That's being impatient. I've seen that also when, you know, you're stuck in traffic jams. There's no real traffic jams here compared to places like Bangkok. So what do I do, you know, when I go to Bangkok? I'll tell you what I do, what happened to me last week when I went to Thailand to teach a meditation retreat. And this is, you know, how a monk is patient. Because I landed at the airport and it was a 220-kilometer ride to the retreat center where I was giving my retreat. So it usually takes about 4 hours. So what does a monk do for a 4-hour journey? I'll tell you what I did. I got police escort. Only took me 2 hours. That's what happens when you're a patient monk. You get there faster than anybody. It's really fun being a monk, having a police escort, but I was very disappointed when I came back to Perth. Where's my police car? Actually, once when I was in Sri Lanka, I was given a police escort down the Gaul Road, a very busy road. And so, you know, I had a policeman in front of me in the car with the sirens wailing, and I was sitting in the back with, you know, a friend who was a driver. And the driver's, well, I think his brother, passed him on the other side of the road. He didn't realize he was taking a monk to sort of an important engagement. And his brother, seeing his, the friend seeing his brother behind a police car, sort of rang him on his mobile phone. "Are you in trouble? Do you want a lawyer? Is there anything I could do?" So that's one of the troubles if you're following a police car. People think you've broken the law. But anyway, being a patient person, you don't worry if you get there. Whenever you get there, doesn't really matter because you're not really going anywhere. You're always where you are. Maybe the situation and the scenery around you changes. But it doesn't really matter, you're always here. So learning how to be patient, learning how to be here with what you have, and learning from it. And when life gets difficult, instead of trying to get rid of it, and when's it going to get out of the way, when's it going to be finished, you learn to be with it, to learn from these things. Because that's what life is really all about. That's what we're here for, to learn. If you're not patient with things, if you try and get rid of things too quickly, you miss these wonderful opportunities from learning and growing and being much more beautiful people. Now, during the week when I came back, somebody sent me a fax about a story of a man in Singapore. They wanted me to talk about it because it's an inspiring story, and it does fit into this talk. And there was actually an article which was in one of the newspapers in Singapore about a man who had a sort of some spinal problem and had an operation, and during the operation the surgeon actually dropped an instrument on his spine and paralyzed him. It's a surgical accident. What would you do if that happened to you in Australia? Would you sue the doctor? This guy said, "I forgive you. It's an accident, never mind." Even though he was paralyzed, he forgave the doctor and had no anger or ill will. And so, not hardly being able to walk, just to be able to stagger with incredible pain, he goes to the hospital every week to help some of the medical students learn about these difficult conditions like paralysis. He offers his time there for free, without a complaint, just getting on in his life, not with any negativity, but just learning how to be with his so-called disability. And this is an important thing in life. A person can do that, and he's inspiring so many people apparently, simply by the fact that something terrible happened to him. And instead of being negative about it, instead of complaining about it, instead of getting a lawyer and suing this doctor, he's learning how to be with his disability, to embrace it and use it for something wonderful, to inspire other people on how we can live a much more beautiful life without complaining so much. And indeed, this is a core teaching of the Buddha. He said, even though your body hurts, your mind doesn't need to be hurt. He said, there's two types of suffering. There's a physical suffering, which sometimes we just can't do anything about. And there's a mental suffering, which we can do everything about. He said, whatever you have to experience in this life, it's the mental suffering is a big problem. Which is why that I've noticed that here in a country like Australia, people are just so well looked after, so well fed, put such good medical care, and such a high suicide rate. Doesn't make sense, does it? We're very healthy, well looked after physically. But why do sometimes people kill themselves? And the reason is the mental pain. People don't kill themselves. They don't jump off bridges or shoot themselves or hang themselves when they've got cancers. They kill themselves for emotional reasons. The pain in the mind is far, far, far greater than the pain in the body. No matter how much physical pain you have to bear, the mental pain hurts more. When you really understand that, you understand just that if we learn how to deal with the mental part of the pain, like that fellow from Singapore learned how to do. Yeah, you're paralyzed, you're in some great physical pain, but his mind was strong and wise enough to learn a little bit about patience, to be able to be with things, rather than wishing he was somewhere else, or wishing that the pain would go away. Learning how to be with things is an important part of our spiritual life. And to know how to be with things is a core story which was in the book Opening the Door of Your Heart. But every time I say some of these stories from Opening the Door of the Heart, a lot of people, I found, even though the book's available there, haven't read that book. So I don't mind telling these stories. When I ask people in Thailand, and that the book in Thai is very popular over there, it's sold about 300,000 copies by now. So, now how are you patient? There's a very core story, something you can take home and put into practice, the Emperor's Three Questions. A powerful story which did change my life when I first read this in a book of short stories by Tolstoy. How to be patient, and basically how to live life. There was an emperor who was way ahead of his time because he had it up to here with organized religions. You know, Buddhism is not an organized religion, is it? If you try and get anything organized in this place, you find how it is not an organized religion. You know, we get by, you know, with best wishes to the vice president and to our committee. Yeah, we get by. We manage to sort of do things eventually. But it's not all that organized. So it's not an organized religion. So he had it up to here with organized religion. So like, you know, a powerful person, he wanted to get his own religion, sort of get the best from here and the best out of there, like modern people today. To find out something which worked for him and which was practical. So after a lot of contemplation, talking to wise people, discussing with his ministers, he finally came up to three questions, three essential questions. If he had the answers to these questions, he would have all the religion and philosophy he needed. Keep it simple was his motto. So the three questions were, when is the most important time? Who is the most important person? And what is the most important thing to do? And those were his three questions. And the short story told his journey to find out the answers to those three questions. And he never found those answers from a monk, or from a priest, or from a book. He found those answers from his own experience of life. And the answer to the first question, when is the most important time? What's the answer? Now that's the right answer. So when is the most important time to say sorry? Now, if you wait till tomorrow or even 1 minute from now, the opportunity passes. I don't know how many of you wish you would have said sorry, and now that person has passed away, and you can't say sorry anymore. How many times did you wish to say to someone you really cared for, that you really did love them, and the opportunity has passed? How many times has been an opportunity to put a donation in the box? Missed the opportunity again. So now is the most important time. In a couple of days' time, it's the end of the financial year. You'd have lost your tax breaks. So now is the most important time. So you all know that. But take that seriously. Because opportunities in life, they pass you by too quickly. And if you don't sort of are in the moment and realize that now is the most important time, don't put it off until tomorrow. Anything really important, do it now. Now is the most important time. And the next question, who is the most important person? Now those of you who've heard the story before, who read the book, please shut up. Because I love having this little game and having a bit of fun. Who is the most important person? Any ideas? Yourself, someone says yourself. Please put up your hand if you think it's yourself. It's the most important person. I think too many of you are scared, I think. Or you know the story, because that is the wrong answer. It's not yourself. But many people think that's the right answer. I thought that was the right answer, but that misses the point of patience. You aren't the most important person in the world. The most important person in this story is the one you're with. Whoever that happens to be. And sometimes, not even the one you're with. The dog you're with. That's the most important dog in the world right now. When it's barking, when you're with them. The pain you're experiencing is the most important person. Whoever you're with, that's the most important thing in the world. Because that's your life. That's your experience. And the most important thing to do is not to shoot the dogs. The most important thing is to care. To care for those dogs. To care for the person in front of you. To care for this moment. To be patient with it. Embracing it, respecting it, and allowing it to be. This is what we mean by patience. That little simile, or that story, the Emperor's Three Questions, now is the most important time. The one you're with is the most important person or thing. And the most important thing to do is to care. Became the answers to those Emperor's Three Questions and made him a very wonderful man. A very efficient emperor. A spiritually very profound person. Very deep, very wise, very caring. And it's also very useful in your life. There was one of the disciples from Penang a couple of years ago. She heard that story and she put it in her to her life and customer relations. And she was in a big firm in Penang and she came up to tell me with great glee that she applied for a promotion, a prestigious promotion. She had 100-150 other people applying for that job. She got it. And she said she got it because she used the Emperor's Three Questions. Whenever she was in customer relations, whoever was in front of her, whether it was her boss, a customer or a co-worker, they were the most important person in the world for her. Now is the most important time. And she cared. She cared for this person. They felt it. When you can have that attitude, now is the most important time, the one you're with is the most important person, and the most important thing to do is to care. You have a secret of life which is going to create a huge success, richness and peace in your life. Because you're with life and you're caring for life, no matter who it is, no matter what it is. And our problem is that half of life we want to get rid of, half of people we want to get rid of. When I first heard that answer to that question, the three questions, it sort of made so many things clear to me. At that time I was a student, and like many students, you know, after the lecture, you know, have an interesting sort of take on what was being said. So you go up to these lecturers and you ask them afterwards, and they're not listening to you. They're trying to get rid of you. You know, because basically, then they've got more important things to spend their time talking to a long-haired student. And I felt so rejected. Person wasn't interested in me, wasn't caring at all. But every now and again I came across people. I remember this one person I came across, he gave a lecture, he's a very famous individual, and I went out to ask his silly question, and he paid total attention to me. It was a wonderful feeling. That was maybe the first time that someone who I didn't know looked at me as if I was the most important person in the world for them at that time. And that's why there's communication and respect. Now, on that Emperor's Three Questions, when you go home tonight and you see your partner, are they the most important person in the world for you? Or are they not really, you take them for granted? And you know, you've got something else to do. I'll talk to her later. I'll see him afterwards. It's one of the reasons why relationships break down, why marriages fail. Because when husband sees wife, they don't look upon each other as the most important person in the world anymore. Taken for granted. Rejected. If you look at your partner and really think, in this moment, right this time, they are the most important person in the world, and you care for them, then you'll find your relationship will blossom and grow, and you'll have a wonderful time together. Because the other person will know that you are respecting them and giving them importance. And you find it's only the one who's with you. When your partner goes, maybe your kid, that how many children in today's world are never given that sort of quality attention from their parents, because their parents are so-called busy. They're not busy, they just haven't got patience to be with things. Now, last night I gave a talk at the Chinese Chamber of Commerce to all these big shop business leaders, and they were all sort of, one of the questions was saying, it's all very well, but you know, we've got so much stuff to do, how do we do it? And they say, look, you get far more done in life when you stay in the moment, you're patient and do things, be with what you're doing rather than always running ahead of yourself. You get far more done. One of the problems in productivity is that we forget about efficiency. The hours spent at your desk in front of the computer are not as important as the quality of your work, how efficient you are. And you find if you can actually do one thing at a time and be with it, and this telephone call right now is the most important thing in the world to you, at this moment. And when you finish, then the next thing is the most important thing. And you care for every moment, you're in the moment, rather than trying to get this thing out of the way so you can do the something which is more important later on. That's where people get stressed out, trying to get rid of things so they can go somewhere else. That's the meaning of stress. But if you're with this moment, putting your whole effort and life and energy into this one moment, caring for it, this is the most important moment in the world for you. It's the only moment you have. So care for it. Give yourself totally to whatever you're experiencing right now. Care for it, and you'll find the stress disappears. And you get so much done. Sometimes when I look at the programs when I go overseas, you know where I gave that retreat last week? Well, you were here last Friday, Saturday and Sunday in cold Perth. I was at the Sheraton Beach Resort at Hua Hin, teaching 320 people how to meditate. However, even though you think it's a beautiful place, for a monk, it's torture. You have a TV you can't turn on. You have a jacuzzi you can't get in. A beach you can't swim in. A mini bar which you can't even open the bottle tops of. So much stuff and luxury which other people could enjoy, and you're in this big room and you can't use any of it because of your rooms, because of your rules. That's what we call torture. It's like a few years ago, there was a thing, the 25th anniversary of the International Declaration of Human Rights, and Amnesty International invited me to the dinner to give a speech. I had to decline. I said to them, you're Amnesty International, of all people, you should never invite a monk to dinner. Because if I came, I'd have to sit down in front of an empty plate. We're not allowed to eat in the evening. I'd have to look at all the delicious food you guys are eating, and I can't taste any of it. That's, as you would understand, Amnesty International, that's torture for a monk. And you should be embarrassed even contemplating torturing a monk, you bunch of hypocrites. So that's how I declined. And so it's like torture being in a resort, you know, where you can't use anything. But nevertheless, I was just happy to be there. Have to be in front of a TV you couldn't turn on. Happy to be sort of in front of a jacuzzi you couldn't get in. Happy to be on a beach you couldn't swim in. A swimming pool you couldn't even dive into. Happy to be there. So no matter what happens as a monk, you learn how to be happy to be there, no matter what's happening. Waiting in airports, you know, being sometimes in traffic jams, it wasn't always a police escort. Talking all day, just happy to be here. If you learn how to be happy to be here, you know how to be patient in this moment. Now, whether you're a monk, whether you're a lay person, a business person, whatever, there's always tough times and easy times. But the point is, it's easy to be with the easy times, to wait in this moment when its life is very good. But actually, you can't even do that, most of you. You're having a good time, and you're sort of waiting for it to be over. People usually go on holiday, they can't wait to get there. And when they're there, they can't wait to get back home again. That's why even on that last day of the retreat which I was in Hua Hin, in Thailand, you know, we didn't finish the retreat until mid-afternoon. People had their bags packed before breakfast. What are you packing your bags for so early? You haven't left yet. Is that what you do? Always pack your bags early, just in case. We don't live in the moment, we live in the future. And because we live in the future, we're never here. Because we're never here, we never know patience. We never know about this is the most important time. The thing you're with right now is the most important thing. And to care. Maybe the caring is the most important, because the caring is valuing something. This is important. So last night one of the business people said, look, it's so hard sometimes being in business. You have to really push through a contract, you have to spend hours working on it. And I said, look, you know, you chose to be in business, that's what business is like. Now you have to give that extra hours sometimes. But you've got a choice there. You have to do that contract. Enjoy it. You know, enjoy the struggle. Enjoy the bit of extra work you have to do. Why not? You've got to do it anyway. Care for it. And that's what I've done as a monk. You know, I don't just sit here all the time. Just a couple of weeks ago, when we were all that rain, just before I gave the talk last time, I was out there at the meditation retreat center, sort of getting soaking wet like all the other monks. And just, you know, pulling some of the old building materials you got buried under some earth and some trees. You know, when the builders were there, they left it there and just someone else bulldozed some earth over it and got all mangled up. We had to pull it all out and so we can recycle it. It was really tough work, and there you are, a 58-year-old monk working in the wet and the dirt and getting all dirty. I love that. You know, boys being boys again, getting the mud and the dust. So, you learn, but even if it was tough, you know, you just allow it to happen. You're with this moment. You learn how to be in this moment. You haven't got much choice, so you just do it and have fun with it. If you learn this method of actually being patient, being with things, you find that life is much easier. Perhaps the most important experience I had about this was when I was still with Ajahn Chah, my master in Thailand. And sometimes, you know, people say, how did he teach you? Especially, you know, actually by this time I was fluent in Thai. When you first went to places like that, now how did, this Ajahn Chah couldn't speak a word of English. Actually, he did learn one word of English when he went to London for a few weeks. And when he came back, we asked him in Thai, did you learn any English, you know, any English words when you were staying in London? He said, yeah, I learned one word. What was that? Cup of tea. That's the only word. Because you know, being in London, you heard that all the day, cup of tea, you want a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. So that's the only word in English he knew. That's probably because he was Ajahn Chah. But anyway. But how did he teach us? And this is an example of like the wisdom of a great monk. It was more like by example, by object lessons. Because on this one occasion, we were building a main hall in his big monastery in Wat Pa Phong, where he lived. And once the hall was finished, there was all this earth left over. And so, guess who had to move it? The monks. No free labour. Exploitation. We didn't have a union in that time. We always thought we should have started a union so we're not exploited by the senior monks. But now I'm a senior monk and I exploit my younger monks. But that's just part of it. It's not really exploitation. It's giving the opportunity to make good karma. So on this occasion, Ajahn Chah was giving us the opportunity to make good karma. We had to move all this earth. And it was a huge pile of earth. Now, imagine, just this is not sort of Bangkok, not some city, this is out in the jungles, in the forests. Many of you may have gone to these monasteries, but they're much thicker in those days, and now it's really nice. In those days it was thick forest, lots of mosquitoes, we'd have hardly anything to eat, very small amount of food. The meal was over by about 9 o'clock, and so the rest of the day from 9 o'clock until you couldn't see anymore, well, you couldn't see, you got lanterns out, we were shoveling and pushing earth all day. So what was that, about 15, no, maybe about 13, no, 15 hours, no. Yeah, it was about 13 hours of solid work, sort of pushing earth, labouring in the hot weather, sticky, steaming, and being bitten by mosquitoes. It was really tough work. But, you know, you had a lot of faith. This was, you know, for your teacher, for a monastery. So you didn't mind doing that. For 3 days it took us to move the earth to where Ajahn Chah wanted to put it. And after the earth we finished, you know, we thought, great, now I can have a shower, wash my robes, and tomorrow do some meditation. What happened that night? Ajahn Chah went to visit another monastery. And so the second monk, the deputy monk, who's now the abbot, who took over from Ajahn Chah, the deputy monk, after our morning meal, called us all together. He said, I've been thinking last night, so that earth's in the wrong place. Now we should move it somewhere else. And yeah, he had a good point. It made a lot of sense once he explained it to us. So another 3 days of hot work in the steaming, mosquito-ridden jungle. You know, just one meal a day. It was tough, but you know, you could do it. You know, patience and stuff. So, 3 more days of hard, filthy work. And after the 6th day, you know, we finished, we moved it to where we wanted. And again, I thought, I'm going to have a nice rest tonight. Tomorrow, I'm going to wash all my robes. They were filthy, they were stinky. And have a nice meditate the next day. But that night, Ajahn Chah came back. And after the meal, he called us together and said, I thought I told you to put the earth over there. Now you put it over here. Move it. So we had to move it again. 3 more days of hard, filthy work were in front of me. And it was at that time that I lost my faith. These stupid senior monks, they don't push the wheelbarrows, they just sit in the room talking to people all day. They don't have to sort of work hard, they don't have to enjoy mosquitoes and stuff. And I was really upset. I was angry. And like I was conditioned to do, if you're angry in a place like Australia or in England, what do? Swear. So that's what I was doing, swearing. Sort of in English, so the Thai monks couldn't understand what I was really saying. But they could see I wasn't very happy. And one of them came up to me, and sadhu to him, he gave me this incredibly powerful teaching. He told me, pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the difficult part. Pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. And that just went right to my heart. I stopped thinking about it and complaining. And instead, I just pushed. In the moment, caring for what I was doing, not complaining. And I found the wheelbarrow was very easy to push from that time on. It felt lighter. And those extra 3 days went by in a flash. When I thought 3 more days, I wasn't being patient, I wasn't waiting in the moment. I was waiting in the future, waiting for this terrible experience to disappear. But when I learned patience, I was in this moment, pushing a wheelbarrow, caring for it, and there was no problem at all. This is a thing when you know what patience is. It makes everything so easy. When you're waiting for it to finish, it makes it impossible to bear. And that's what complaining is. Not wanting to be here, wanting to get rid of this and go somewhere else. That is the problem. It's the mental suffering. So when I learned not to think about these things, just do it, it's fine, it actually was far more pleasant. It was fun. And of course, after those next 3 days, when we finished moving that earth, we didn't have to move it again. After 9 days, I could have my shower, I could wash my robes and do some more meditation, have a rest. And to this day, I think those 2 monks sat down that evening before and planned it all out. we'll teach these monks about patience and about some teachings which will help them for the rest of their life. So that's what I have to do now. If I have to travel somewhere, I just do it. Now, if you have to give lots and lots of talks, and sometimes I talk from early in the morning to late at night, you don't think about it, you just do it. If you have to go to the dentist, if you have to have chemotherapy, radiation therapy, surgery, just do it. Don't think about it. And then you find the trick of being patient. Waiting in this moment, being here, caring for this moment, instead of complaining or wanting to get somewhere else. Understanding this, you understand just how to be here. And just by not wanting to go anywhere else, you find a lot of the emotional suffering disappears. And that's 90% of the problem. And you find that life becomes so much more easy, and you can do so much more. I told that business person, whenever you're doing a very difficult contract, the difficult part is complaining about it. When you're complaining about it, you're not being efficient, you're wasting too much time, you have to do it anyway, so just do it and stop the complaints. That's why monks are supposed to be peaceful beings. We don't always have an easy lifetime. You know, sometimes we work hard, we do difficult things, we have to talk to people in emotional stress, sometimes for hours on end. Sometimes we work our butts off from 8, I used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's sometimes when I start work. So it's very difficult sometimes, but you don't complain, you enjoy every moment of it. That's why it's easy to do. So, how hard do you work? How many hours? How difficult is your life? For goodness sake, stop complaining and just do it. If you know how to do that, life becomes so easy and it's so much more fun. You have more joy in life. It's learning, as I say, how to wait in this moment. Serve this moment. It's here for you. It's teaching you. And if it is a difficulty, it means it's something you have to learn. It's all growing pain. I call it growing pain because it is pain. You have to grow. You have to learn something. There's a lesson there for you. So from the difficulties in life, that's the fertilizer, that's the cow shit which we put on our gardens to make the flowers grow. It's smelly now, but what can you do when you're loaded with a bundle of shit and it's not you? That's the title of the Opening the Door of Your Heart American version. Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung, it's called. And isn't that what happens to you in life? You're treated so unfairly, isn't it? Sometimes these things happen to you and it's not, you didn't do it. It's not your fault. And someone criticizes you totally unfairly. They spread rumors about you which are totally unfounded. And you got terrible luck. Now you find that you've won the $90 million lotto, but you know your ticket's expired, or your husband's run away with your lottery ticket, or something else. You get so close. It's so unfair sometimes. Do you think that life is unfair? If you do, you're missing the point. The point of life, if these things happen to you, thank you, there's more fertilizer for my garden. Every time someone dumps a load of shit on you, thank you so much. It's more fertilizer for my garden. Or, like that story which I've told some time ago. I told this some years ago to the president of Sri Lanka. He loved this story because if you're in any position of power, if you're a prominent personality, the media eventually gets on your back and gives you a very, very hard time. And this little story is one of my favorite stories. I haven't told it for a long time now. It's the story of the donkey. Now once there was a donkey, and this donkey, this is how to actually to make use of things. Instead of complaining about them, wishing they weren't there, how to embrace this moment, be patient, and learn how to make use of what life gives you. So this donkey was happily wandering through the forest, minding its own business, you know, chewing a bit of a leaf here and just enjoying the beautiful scenery of the forest. And unfortunately, the donkey fell into a well. There was an abandoned well in the middle of the forest, and the donkey fell right into it. Unfortunately, the well was dry, and the donkey wasn't that deep, and the donkey didn't break any bones. But there was the donkey at the bottom of the well, and as you know, donkeys can't climb. So how could the donkey get out of the well? He did the only thing a donkey could. He cried out for help. And this is my donkey cry. Which doesn't really sound like a donkey, but nevertheless, that's the best you're going to get out of me. Actually, what do donkeys sound like anyway? Eeaw. Okay. That's much better. Thank you, that. Eeaw. That's just not much of an improvement, but that's what you asked for. So be patient with this silly monk. And he'd been eeawing for a long time. And the farmer heard a sound. It was a really weird sound, like a donkey, you know, from underground. He followed the sound just out of curiosity. And he looked into the well. He saw the donkey down the bottom. The donkey thought, at last I've been saved. But this farmer was a very cruel, mean man. He hated donkeys, especially that donkey. He said, serve you right. But then, I can't leave the donkey like that in the well. And also that well was a dangerous health hazard. Somebody else might fall into that well. So he got a great idea. How he can solve two problems at once. I was going to say kill two birds with one stone, but that's not a Buddhist parable. These days we say cut two carrots with the same knife. So I like to change these sort of, I know, Western metaphors. Kill two birds with one stone. You should never say that if you're a Buddhist. Cut two carrots with one knife. Or, you know, the other one, which I don't like, you know, you teach a man to fish. No, you give a man a fish, you feed him for one day. You teach a man to fish and he breaks his five precepts forever. So I don't like that one. I said, teach a man, give a man a carrot and you feed him for one day. Teach a man how to grow a veggie garden, you feed him for life. I mean, change these old parables, make them more Buddhist. But anyway, this donkey was in the bottom of the well, and the man thought, no, he's going to cut two carrots with the same knife. So he decided to get out his spade and fill the well in with a donkey on the bottom. He was going to bury this donkey alive. And so he started shoveling dirt all over the donkey. And as soon as the donkey realized what was going on, eeaw, really loud, he's really upset, he's being killed. I'm sure you'd do something like that if you were being buried alive at the bottom of the well. But after a few minutes, that donkey, he had an insight. I think he must have been listening to these talks on his iPod or something. Because the donkey got a great insight. Just be patient. Embrace the moment. Don't try and get somewhere else, but learn how to make use of what you've got. The donkey was quiet. It didn't make a sound. And the farmer thought, ha ha ha, I buried that stupid donkey. But what the farmer didn't realize, that donkey, the next shovel of earth, which went on its back, all the donkey did was shake it off, stamp it in, and the donkey was an inch higher. Another shovel of earth, shake it off, stamp it in, and another inch higher. And that farmer was so busy shoveling, he didn't notice a pair of ears appear above the rim of the well. He didn't even notice a whole donkey head go above the rim, because every shovel of earth, shake it off, stamp it in, another inch higher. And soon the donkey was high enough, he jumped out of the well, and according to the story, he bit the farmer on the backside, just to teach him the law of karma, and ran away. So I told that to the president of Sri Lanka, look, if people shove dirt all over you, just shake it off, stamp it in, and you're an inch higher. So isn't that a wonderful thing? If your husband scolds you and throws earth on you, stamp it in, shake it off, and then you're an inch higher. So you don't have to be negative about these things which happen to you in life. Whatever happens, you can always make use of it. It's always fertilizer for your life. So that's why we can be patient. We can wait in this moment. This is where the action is. And if we wait in this moment, this is where the action is. Instead of thinking, oh, why does this always happen to me? Why do the people are so cruel to me? Why do people ask me to do so much? Why do people always call me up from overseas? As soon as I arrived back from overseas, they call me back from overseas and other places. Can you solve this problem, that problem? I don't know why they keep sort of calling up a monk to solve their problems for them. It's not, they actually did call it dial a monk service at Bodhinyana Monastery. I think the only reason why they ask a monk to solve all their problems is because they don't charge anything. Now, if we charge, in our Dharma monk service, 6 cents an hour, you probably think twice about ringing us, but maybe we should do that one day. But anyhow, as we understand and accept this moment, that's what patience is. Whether you're stuck in the traffic, whether you're out there in the rain, whether you're having a surgery for some difficult ailment, whether you are, in the funeral parlour with somebody you love who's just died. Can't we be with this moment? It's important. Can't we realise that whatever we experience is the most important moment of our lives? And the most important thing to do is to care. Care for this moment. It's constantly teaching us, constantly strengthening us. And this is actually where we learn the Dhamma. Just like the emperor, you don't learn it from books or from monks. You learn it from life. And life is constantly offering you these wonderful teachings. What do? We reject it because we want to get somewhere else. We want to get it out of the way. We want to finish with life. And that's why so many people, when they get old, they wonder where life has gone. And they're as stupid as when they were born, which is why they have to come back and do the class all over again in their next life. Do you really want to come back again and get reborn again? Have to go to school again, wear nappies again? Not me. So if you don't want to get reborn again, whatever happens to you in life, please embrace it, be patient with it, wait in this moment, serve this moment, because it's got lots to teach you. That's my little talk this evening on patience. So has anyone got any questions or comments, hopefully not complaints, of this talk this evening on patience? So you can all be more patient people. Especially if you work in the tax office. It takes a while for people to fill out their tax forms at the end of the year, so be patient. I'm still waiting for a question. Are you waiting to go? Okay, we'll let you go now.